ज्ञानतिमरन्दस्य तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
Disciple Sangha at Guru and Poonam's house on Sunday, the 12th of April.
Let's talk about Vaishnava etiquette. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that Vaishnava etiquette is the ornament of the devotee. And those, well, first of all, who can give without looking at an electronic device? A definition of etiquette. Who knows how to spell etiquette?
I can spell it.
You can? I'm impressed. Okay, go ahead.
Etiquette.
Is that right? Very good. Okay, and who would like to venture a definition?
Yeah. Proper behavior.
Nice. Anything? Yes?
Manners.
Very nice. Good. Proper behavior, manners. Anything else you'd add?
I think I would throw something with culture, because it'd have to be
culturally appropriate.
Manners.
That makes a lot of sense too. That's helpful, because what may seem like good manners in one place, like in Japan, people eat a lot of noodles. And you're supposed to slurp them really loud. So when you eat noodles with chopsticks, you hold the bowl and you go... But if you do that here, people look at you, what kind of slob did they let in here?
What's wrong with you, boy?
But in Japan, it's... Yes.
It's like the way you act, because sometimes someone might say you have the wrong etiquette. So, or I guess manners. Or yeah, it's just the way you act.
It's the way you act, the way you carry yourself. So here's what the dictionary here says. I liked all of yours better if we put them all together. The customary code of polite behavior in society or among members of a particular profession or group. It comes from French, which the word etiquette means a list of ceremonial observances of a court. Also label, from the old French ticket. So there are prescribed rules and ways of acting. And in general, it means all the things that you all said, manners, it's really important, and the cultural context and how you're observing the manners. And what were the other things that you said? The definitions?
Behavior.
Okay. So there's a Vaishnava etiquette. One thing is that Vaishnavas are very much eager to not offend others. They move in the world in a very special way. In fact, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's mentioned by the author that one should gather this verse, Janadapi Sunichena, Toror Api Sivishnina, Amanina, Manadena, Kirtaniya Sadahari, and string it as a garland. So how will you do that? String it as a garland. And then he says, wear it around your neck. And how will you wear it around your neck? So what are the jewels that are in this verse that one must string and wear as an ornament, or wear as a garland around one's neck? And what does it mean to do that? Who can say what are the jewels in that verse?
Did you give the English?
The English means... Well, somebody else. I think in the process of giving what the jewels are, that the English will come out.
I heard chanting the names of the Lord.
Kirtaniya Sadahari. That's in the verse. It means that one will be able to go on constantly chanting the names of the Lord. Will and I were just talking about this, about the importance of continuing the chanting. In fact, it says in one of our shastras, the Padma Purana, Nama Parada Yuktanam Naman Yeva Haranpyagam Abhishani Prayuktani Tanyevarta Karanicha. If you're chanting offensively, the remedy is to keep chanting, don't stop. Because the holy name is so powerful that if you keep chanting, you're bound to at least chant one name that's in Nama Bhas. And then you'll get such benefit from that. It'll give you strength to continue. So this is one of the statements of the verse, Kirtaniya Sadahari, that one should continually chant the holy name of the Lord. Does anybody know what the other points are? Yes.
One should be as humble as a blade of grass.
What does that mean?
To think oneself very lowly. Be tolerant.
To think oneself very lowly.
Give respect and not respect and be respectful.
Well, let's think about this, what it means to feel lowly. Does it mean lack of self-esteem that you feel? I mean, what's the difference between low self-esteem and thinking oneself very lowly? Yeah.
I think low self-esteem means you have no self-worth. And thinking oneself lowly is humility. So you're thinking that you're a servant to everyone and not above those people.
Okay. There's a difference in effect also. You were going to say?
No.
Please.
Well, another thing I was just thinking is that we're all part and parcel of Krishna. We really are tiny and small and in one sense insignificant among all trillions of living entities. So to recognize that and not think oneself more than that.
Yeah, low self-esteem may mean I like to put myself in the center, but it's not working out, therefore I feel very morose and unmotivated. Whereas when one has this correct vision that I'm actually significant when I'm connected as a servant, but I'm very tiny, and therefore my role is dependent on others, on Krishna, and on the mercy of everyone else, and therefore I feel lowly and insignificant. So this idea that of feeling oneself lowly, it doesn't mean low self-esteem. It doesn't mean that one becomes morose and ineffectual. But it means that one has a very clear understanding of who I am. I'm not this body, but who am I? I'm a servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna. And I relish that position. The more I think about it and the more I engage as a servant of the servant, the more I actually feel empowered and enlivened, because you can do that anywhere. Everyone wants a servant somewhere. And there's service available in every nook and corner of the universe. But as soon as I try to be the center, then that position's already taken, it's not available. So I can become a rose. So that's one of the jewels of the verse, is to consider oneself very lowly. Then the verse goes on to talk about, you mentioned tolerance, right? How tolerant should one be according to this verse?
As tolerant as a tree.
How tolerant is a tree? Can you say?
Well, it takes like almost everything. Like it takes all the weather, and I mean, like it also like I don't know how to explain it because like it just.
Well, you're doing nicely.
Well,
it takes weather. I mean, that's one thing. The tree's out there getting pounded, and it still gives shelter to others.
And people like cut it up too, so.
Doesn't complain, right?
Doesn't complain, doesn't do anything.
And it still goes on serving.
Yeah.
So you could cut the tree down and it'll still serve.
Right.
It'll become firewood, it'll become a house, and go on serving. We're sitting on a tree right now, on this beautiful floor here. So, being tolerant like a tree.
Oscar.
And then, you want to add to that, Oscar? Nice. Thank you. Then comes giving respect to others. The verse, the way it's translated, says one should be prepared to give respect to all others and not expect anything in return. Is that possible? Is it possible to be ready for that?
Yeah.
One should be ready to offer all respect to others and not expect anything in return. Possible? Are you all ready for it? That's why he says you should wear it around your neck as a garment. So these are the various jewels that are within this verse. That one should feel oneself very lowly, see one's actual position as insignificant and helpless. One should be tolerant like a tree, more tolerant than a tree, ready to offer all respect to others, not expecting any respect in return. This verse, out of all the different verses, is the most important for Vaishnavas. to keep in mind. Because if you stay in this state of mind, then Kirtaniya Sadahari, you can go out chanting. And Queen Kunti talks about this in her prayers. Very important prayer, very basic, where she says that if you're a little intoxicated with what you have now, she said, Janmaishvara Shruta Shribir Edamanamadapuman Naivarhat Yabidakum by Tama Kinshana Gochar, which means, Janma means birth. You think, I have a higher birth than other people. I come from where?
Rich family.
Okay. I'm from America. I'm from a rich family. I'm cooler than everyone else. So that becomes a disqualification, that mentality. Because am I really American? No. This is just a designation. America is just like a political line on a thing. I mean, people root for a team. It's like, go such and such. It's like, we won. You didn't win anything. You didn't even play. You just identified with the team. So similar. And when they lose, people become, they start riots. I saw after the basketball recently, whoever it was lost, got really upset, started some fires and things like that. We lost. And it's like, don't worry, you didn't, nothing happened. You're still the same. So these designations. And so if one thinks Janma Aishwarya, or I'm very opulent, Shruta, I'm very learned, I know more than others, Shribir, I'm beautiful. And all these things become disqualifications. Therefore, Kunti says that you have to become a kinchana. And kinchana means something. It's like, I'm something, whatever it is. And a kinchana means, I don't have any qualification at all. This is the base point from which one can chant. A kinchana gochara. And that's what attracts Krishna, not anything else. You can't present any beauty, fame, wealth, knowledge that will attract Krishna. Only this feeling of bhakti, of devotion, based on the fact that I'm insignificant and helpless. So, if one takes these, how many are there jewels that we named? Let's help countless count them.
The tongs,
grass.
The grass.
Then?
There's the
ready to offer all respects to others. Tolerant in a tree. Not expecting anything in return, and constantly chanting the holy name. We could say five jewels. So now you need some string, right? Keshu, where do you get some string to make this garland to put around your neck? Michael's. You've got to go to Michael's. And if you go to Michael's and you tell him, I have these jewels and I want to string you and make them into a garland, and they'll give you some string. They're very helpful there. They'll say, here's your string. You go and then you can take it home. It's a home project. You actually have to go home and set it up and tell everyone in the family, I got a home project here, homework given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that I have to make a garland and I have to wear it around. So you actually string those. It means you have to consciously cultivate it. Think about it in your life. And you make that garland, and then what does it mean to put it around your neck, a garland like that?
It's a reminder.
It's a reminder.
So it's to internalize it, to really bring that, make that a part of your psyche, a part of your character.
Yeah. And it really is something, if you wore a reminder like that physically around your neck, what if you actually wore those things around your neck? People would see that, they would remind you, they'd always be thinking of it. So that's how much it should be in the four. That should be our contemplation. Yes?
I was saying that, you know, like, you said the servers would wear a button, and how can I serve you, or happy to serve you? I was just thinking about that.
Yes.
Wearing the garland.
Yeah.
Applying that so everyone sees it, you see it.
That's right.
It becomes you.
That's right. And mm-hmm. people will remind you too. Mm-hmm. If you get a little intolerant, they'll go, well, what about that thing? Hey, wait a minute, you got that, you know? And so that leads nicely into Vaishnava etiquette, because the way we move in the world reflects our consciousness, what we actually have in our consciousness. One thing I always appreciate and notice about devotees, if you bump into somebody, even slightly. Like yesterday I was leading Guru Puja, Kirtan, and Tukaram Prabhu was standing right next to me, and our arms just barely grazed. And so, you know, he went like this, and I went like that. Like, sorry I touched you. I seen that at O'Hare Airport one day. I was walking through the terminal, and there were two men who were on their cell phones, and they were walking down the hall with their briefcases. And just because neither of them was watching where they were going, their briefcases clipped. It was clipped. And each one of them turned around, and I was like, watch where you're going. But in Vaishnava etiquette, we're very careful about how we come in contact with other living entities. We're very aware of the fact that each person is special. Everybody, not just human bodies, but also animal bodies, are temples. They're moving temples called tabernacles. A tabernacle is a portable temple. And the Supreme Spirit is there within the body, and so is the essence, the soul. And therefore, we have to move in the world in a special way and treat other living entities with respect. It doesn't mean that if you see a tiger, you have to go over and pet him. It's a good tiger, because sometimes people misinterpret. In the Bhagavad Gita, this verse that, where Krishna says, what is a learned person? He doesn't say someone went to Princeton or Harvard. No offense if anybody went there. But he says, Vidya vinaya sampane brahmani gavi hastini shuni chaiva shupake cha pandita samadarshina. He says a learned person is one who treats everyone with respect, seeing that although they're different bodies, although someone may be a tiger, another person may be a learned priest, another person may be a low-class person in the eyes of society, he sees each one of them equally. And if we don't make the mistake, he says, that then he interacts with all of them equally. For instance, he sees, as I said, a tiger and goes over and says, well, you're equal to a man, therefore I'll just hang out with you. Because that would be a mistake. Doesn't make that mistake, but actually sees the spiritual essence. So the point is, you have to be careful how we move in the world and how we interact with others. So Vaishnava etiquette has a lot to do with respect. It's respecting Krishna and Krishna's devotees. So there are a lot of different aspects of this etiquette. And a few of them are listed on various websites. Bhakti Chur Swami has a nice summary on his. And the list is extensive, actually. If you notice somebody who has a really good sense of Vaishnava etiquette, you'll notice that they're careful how they move in the world, and then they interact with others in a very gentle way. And one of the most important aspects of our practice is avoiding offenses to others, especially to Vaishnavas, who of whom we're in the midst. We have to be guarded and keep our eyes trained to spot any offenses in ourselves so that we don't offend other devotees. Of course, we shouldn't offend any living entity at all. But we happen to live amongst Vaishnavas, who are very special, and we should be careful how we interact with them. So, avoiding Vaishnava aparadha. Aparadha. Does anybody know what that word means? Aparadha. Yes.
I've heard it translated as against love, like rad is devotion and love, and apa, like against.
Very good, yeah. Everyone say aparadha.
Aparadha.
So we want to avoid aparadhas. So Radha, we know, means like Radha and Krishna. She's the pinnacle of devotion. And apa means we're going against that. So we want to avoid aparadhas. So there are various ways that Rupa Goswami mentions in the Nectar of Instruction how we interact with devotees. And he shows that there's a hierarchy. There are those who are just beginning their devotional service. What would be a beginning of devotional service for somebody, according to the Shastra?
Just
hearing.
Hearing?
Chanting.
There's a very specific thing that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says when he was asked, who is a Vaishnav? The residents of Kuliagram want to know, who's a Vaishnav? Guru.
One of the things, I'm not sure if this is the same pastime, but he said, one who chants Hare Krishna.
That's right. Just Jar Mukhe Jar Shune Ek Bar. He says, Krishna Naam She Puja Shesta Shabakar. If I hear one time from the mouth of anybody, person says Hare Krishna, just says Govinda, anything, that I consider that person a devotee. They can say it, because it's not normal. And all the Shastras say the same thing, that if somebody can say the name, then they're very special. It means they've already gone through all kinds of, they've gone to all the holy places of pilgrimage. They've lived in ashrams, they did all kinds of things, they're very special. So he said, you should respect those people in your mind. Within your mind, you should think, as Lord Chaitanya said, this is the best person out of many, out of all the rest, because they have that spiritual qualification to be able to say the name. And then he gives the next definition. He says, and this is in verse 5 of the Nectar Instruction.
Wasn't it like they asked him three times, one time he said one who watches their association, or is that different?
Well, at one time, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was asked, what is a Vaishnava? And he said, asatsanga tar e vaishnavachar, that one who avoids asatsanga, or bad association, that is those who are against Krishna consciousness, one who avoids that kind of association, that means asa. Asatsanga, that avoids that person is, that's the qualification of a Vaishnava. Then he was asked 3 years in a row by the residents of Kulinagram, what is a devotee? The first time he said, one who can say Hare Krishna. And then he said, one who's constantly chanting Hare Krishna. It's the Madhyama Adhikari. And then the next year he said, one who upon seeing that person, everyone else chants Hare Krishna. Mm-hmm. He said, that's the topmost Vaishnava. Someone just sees and goes, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. So three kinds. And in the Nectar of Instruction, Rupa Goswami says, first, anyone who says Hare Krishna, please say Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Should offer your respects. In your mind. And then next he says, someone who's taken initiation. That means they made a vow. That this is the most important thing, this chanting of Hare Krishna. As Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, that there's nothing else to be had in the 14 worlds except this, the holy name. And somebody who takes initiation, that's their feeling, that this is the most important thing to be had. And when someone accepts that initiation, then that person, you should get down and offer respectful obeisances when you meet them. That means you should bodily offer your obeisances. Yes?
Can I ask a question?
You may.
So, isn't there a whole list of the qualities what Vaishnava devotee is supposed to have? Because I always have this argument with my friend Shyam, who is also distributing books 7 days mm-hmm. a week. And she always reminds me, we first have to become devotees. We first have to become Vaishnavas. Then we can actually ask this respect from others. You know, like, of course, devotee will never ask, but, like, to get qualified, and just by association with her, I understood I'm nowhere close to devotee. All these qualities, what's needed, you know, like, materially not to be, have no material desires, and there's a whole list, and I have maybe two qualities, you know, out of that list. So that's why my question is, like, isn't there, like, a whole list when we can actually be called Vaishnavas and be called devotees, not just Sudras? Because that is very, very... She always reminds me, it's very, very... It's not cheap. Krishna is not a cheap thing. Actually, going back to Godhead is not a cheap thing. It's not that easy. So that's why I always never can be relaxed. Because she always reminds me, don't be too relaxed. Because, and also, when we go out, she always reminds, don't laugh. Don't laugh loud. because not only Vaishnava aparat, but Jiva aparat, it's equal in her eyes. So she's like also like my shiksha guru. So that's why I have this for a few weeks.
There is question. A list of qualities of Vaishnavas. And out of all the list, 24 qualities the Vaishnavas have, there's one quality out of the 24 that the acharyas say is the most important. And if you have that one quality, the other qualities will naturally come later. And that is the one quality by which one judges whether one's a qualified Vaishnava or not, and that is that one has faith in Krishna. In other words, and that faith means that, as I mentioned before, someone takes initiation, they say, this is the prime goal, Krishna is the prime goal of life. And his name, he's non-different from his name. This is called Shraddha Shabde Vishwas Kahi Suridhanis Shoy Krishna Bhakti Koyle Sarve Karma Kritahoy. That if I do this, everything else is taken care of. If you have that faith, then according to our acharyas, you're considered a Vaishnava. If you're missing the other 23, they're like, all right, they'll come later. And they do. Because if one goes on serving Krishna, and we've seen, Bhakti Devi is very generous. She lets everybody in the door. So we can't complain, well, who let that guy in? Because, well, who let you in? Don't ask.
You're in.
You're in, and it's like, it's out of mercy. Mercy means it's not justice. Don't ask for justice. You don't want that. We want mercy. Because justice means you get what you deserve. But we're getting special mercy. So the Vaishnavas, somehow or other, if someone has that quality that they have faith in Krishna, they're topmost. And the other things will come. So there's three ways of looking at people. One is according to their past, one is according to their present, and the other is according to their future. And the most merciful is their future. Because some people will say, well, they did this in their past, therefore they're like this. But people change, right? Mm-hmm. Or someone can say, okay, they were like that in the past, but now they're like this, therefore I accept them. That's a little more merciful, right? But then the most merciful of Vaishnavas are saying, they were like that in the past, they're like this in the present, but I see their potential. Because they have that spark, and we say fan the spark, they have that spark of faith, therefore I have no question that we'll come to the perfectional stage. And that's how the acharyas see it. And that's how they say it. They say, if you have that one quality of faith in Krishna, that everything else may be lacking. You may be a rough character even. But because you have that, that will bring out all the other things. And so, did they answer your question?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
Then, let's see, what was I going to say next? What was I going to say next?
You were saying there was a list of qualifications.
Aparadha. List of qualifications.
Vaishnava etiquette.
Yeah, anyway, I'll continue with what I was saying about... Okay, yeah, now I know, I remember what I was going to say. Now, when somebody takes initiation, diksha, one should offer obeisances. Now, I know this question came up because sometimes someone may go through the process of Vaishnava initiation and so forth, and then maybe not follow and so forth. Right? That can be there also. Still, this comes into play. We see that those who have come in contact with Krishna consciousness, they're trying sincerely. They may be of loose character. What does Krishna say? Let's check and see. In the Bhagavad Gita, he says, Apichet sudarasharo bhajite mamananipa sadureva samantavya samyag vyavasito hisaha. And that is that even if, and this is Krishna's words, and they're very strong, apichet means even if that person is sudarashara. Sudarashara means that they're of loose character. Even if they show, they're a devotee. They started, they got in, and they have the faith, but somehow or other, due to the force of past bad habit, somehow or other, they show some worldliness. And that can last a while. It's because there's such a thing as accidental fall down. Mm-hmm. Once somebody asked Prabhupada, that, how do you know if it's an accidental fall down? I mean, what's the difference between an accidental fall down and an intentional one? Mm-hmm. That's a little hard to say, right? So Prabhupada said, if they come back, it was accidental. But when do they come back? It could be 20 years later. But Krishna gives the benefit of the doubt. He says, apichet sudaracharo bhajate mama nandibhag. If they're properly situated, then at least they're trying, they have faith, and they're going on. He says, they're to be considered sadhus, even if they're of loose character, because they're trying, and you know what their future is, because you know the potency of the process of the holy name. Therefore, you should respect them. So I'm just fleshing out this culture of respect. Being a Vaishnava means respect, because we see everything in relation to Krishna. And those things that are particularly dear to Krishna, especially Krishna's devotees, they should be very carefully handled and respected. So therefore, there are all these details in the Shastra about how to respect the Vaishnavas. So first of all, someone who says, you should mentally offer your respect. Someone goes to the trouble of surrendering. It takes a little trouble, right? I surrender, I give up. I want to be a devotee of Krishna officially. I'm going to be initiated. I'm going to surrender to a spiritual master. That takes a little trouble, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, good. So that means that person you should offer bodily obeisances. Now, Shastra shows three ways you can offer obeisances. Here's one. Everyone, please do this. This is a very important mudra. There's a lot you can get from this. It's like a lightning rod, almost, that takes in mercy from above. Comes down. So, like this, you can offer obeisances to others. This is one way. Second way is that you put your head, your arms, including your elbows, and your knees on the ground. So how many spots is that? One, two, three, four, five. Mm-hmm. Five points. One, two, three, four, five. That you put on the ground.
Hands and elbows, right?
Yeah, hands and elbows, but that's they're all connected.
One. Okay.
The shin bones connected to them. So you offer obeisances like that. This is one way of offering. So that's two ways of offering obeisances, right? And what's the third way? Dandavat. Flat on the ground. Like a stick. So these are kind of unusual in maybe modern Western society. You don't see a lot of people doing that. Of course, in Islam, five times a day, they stop whatever they're doing. This is actually Islam is a bhakti program. They're offering their worship to God. So they stop whatever they're doing five times a day, and it doesn't matter where they are. They put out a carpet, and or if they need to. They're driving a cab, they stop the cab. They're working in the airport, they find a place, and they go, and there's a call to prayer, and they put their head on the ground before God. They aim towards Mecca. And so it's a very powerful way of feeling that I'm insignificant and I'm offering my respects, because generally the head is in charge of everything, but when you put the head on the ground and say, now I'm going to put my head before the higher power, before the Supreme. It's one of the points Krishna makes in the Bhagavad Gita, that if you just bow down to me, then this is one of the processes. Namaskuru, just offer your obeisances to me. So three ways. Does someone want to demonstrate the three you can do? Right over here. If we make a little book like this, I think we'll have Oscar as the model. Okay, so one.
This is the first one.
Yeah.
Second one is like.
That's right.
Good. Then. What this?
Very good. Now, stay there for a minute, Oscar. What if, Oscar, you were getting ready to offer obeisances, but you had that in your hand. Mm. Now what would you do? Let me make a suggestion. Go like this, put it down, and then do it. Now offer obeisances. Go. So your hands should be free. One of the points, these are detailed points of etiquette, but like I say, thank you. Give Oscar another hand. People notice these things who know what etiquette means. Don't offer obeisances on one hand. Sometimes somebody's chanting with one hand and they'll come in the temple room and then they'll, like, you know, like this. And Shastra says this is an aparata. You should when you bow down, take everything out of your hand. I put my bead bag in my pocket because there's maybe no other place to put it. And make sure your hands are free. Another thing, if you have Shastra in your hand, don't, you know, put the Shastra on the ground when you're offering your obeisances or hold it in your hands like that. Put it down somewhere else. Anticipate that you're going to offer obeisances and don't do it half-heartedly. Do it fully and think about how you're doing it. But one of the points of etiquette is to do with your hands free. Any questions? Yeah.
Two questions just about the obeisances etiquette. The first one, should our hands touch the floor? Or, like, if we're offering dandavat, should we put our hands on the floor? I see some devotees keep their hands above.
Either way.
Yeah. And the second question is, if we're going, like, frequently in and out of the temple room or in and out of a room where there's senior Vaishnavas, should we pay obeisances each time we enter and each time we leave? Or just...
If you're coming in and out of the temple room, it's a good practice. There's a story about when one of Prabhupada's servants was taking care of him and he would come in and out. And after a while, he started abbreviating his obeisances more and more and more. And then after a while, it was just kind of like this. And then Prabhupada finally said, what is this chopping method you're doing? Because it's just like chopping. But you'll notice, if you take the time when you go in and out of the temple room and don't abbreviate and purposefully, you know, offer your obeisances and then go out, and when you come back in, do it again, there's a kind of, you'll feel some happiness in your heart. It's actually a labor of love, and it's a good idea to do. If you're in an assembly of advanced, of senior devotees, you have to judge it according to the circumstance. If it's your spiritual master, it's a good idea to be more formal. If it's an assembly of devotees that are having a meeting or something, and every time you come in and out, you do it, it may become a little bit of a disturbance. Mm-hmm. So you kind of have to see what the mood of it is. Mm-hmm. And judge according to that. In general, you'll be faulted less for offering obeisances than you will for neglecting them altogether. Mm-hmm. Anything else?
It goes the same line other question you want. When you do obeisances to the deities, our heart is towards the deities. Sometimes if you know advanced devotees there on the side, and when I'm paying obeisances, my feet may be facing him. So is it okay then to reverse the direction of obeisances?
When you get into... Every temple room has different configuration in the world. And if you try to figure it out by compass and setting up one of those geographical surveys, it'll take you an hour before you actually offer obeisances. The first point is you should offer obeisances. And do it the best you can. Sometimes it's awkward because things just go in different directions. Mm-hmm. Actually, Hari Bhakti Vilas says when you offer obeisance to spiritual master, you do head on, head first. If you do that in any temple, people think, oh, they don't know because you're supposed to do it with your left-hand side. But actually, it doesn't hurt to do it with your left-hand side. The deities you should offer from the left, as you were saying. But sometimes it's unavoidable. That, you know, for instance, like in Los Angeles in the temple, Prabhupada's Vyasa-san, and also in Vrindavan,
in
by his, where?
In Laguna also.
In Laguna Beach also, Prabhupada's Vyasa-san is on the left. So when you're offering obeisances going across in Los Angeles to each one of the deities, you know, your feet are going backwards towards the founder Acharya. So some of these things can't be avoided. When they can, try to do your best. When they can't, just offer your obeisances. Yeah? Okay. Yeah?
If we're in front of the deities and senior Vaishnavas that come in the temple room, is it proper to pay obeisances to them? Or because I've heard from some people we shouldn't pay obeisances in front of the deities.
Right, you should not.
You
should not pay obeisance from the deities. You should do so from... if the deities are open, and you're not supposed to offer your obeisances to the senior devotee, even the spiritual master, in front of the deities like that.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, you can do it from a distant place, from afar, or you can do it within your mind, or like this, and then just go on. Another thing is that if you offer obeisances to a senior devotee and you do it very demonstratively, then, for instance, sometimes like a senior devotee or a spiritual master is walking along and then a disciple or someone else will come up and throw themselves in front of the person. And then they have to stop and react. So it's better to do it from a vantage point where you don't interrupt their flow. Don't make it an inconvenience because you want to make it demonstrable. Yes.
So if we're offering our obeisances to senior Vaishnavas or spiritual master, should we do it in such a way that we're seen by them and they understand that we've offered obeisances? Or if we've offered obeisances and it's like maybe they haven't seen you, should you offer them again?
No, you don't have to again.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to register and say, okay, I caught that. It's for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's for us. When we offer obeisance to the superior, then it's a heartfelt way of showing respect. What were you going to say?
Mm-hmm.
Anything else? Let's see what else we have. What did we talk about so far? And what did we say about it?
The jewels we should wear around our neck.
What? What are we going to wear around our neck?
Tolerance.
Yeah.
And ready to offer respects.
Be ready to offer respects to others. Okay.
Humility.
Humility, yeah.
Expecting no respect for ourselves.
Therefore, became qualified to chant the holy names.
Constantly. Okay. And what else did we talk about?
Offering obeisances and the etiquette of that.
Yeah. Can you say more about it?
Yeah, like, there's three ways of offering obeisances. And like, not having things in your hand when you're offering obeisances. And I think we kind of got into that because you offer obeisances to people who are initiated, or what was it?
So the verse is, do you have a nectar of instruction? Let me bring everybody's attention to this verse. It's in verse number 5 in the nectar of instruction. And it's an important verse to read over carefully. In that verse, in the purport, Prabhupada gives his definitions. Of course, there are many definitions of a Kanishtha, Madhyama, and Uttama Adhikari devotee. And people make a lot of big deal about this. And their classifications, Kanishtha, Madhyam, and Uttam means beginning, middle, and topmost. But within those, even when you go into Rupa Goswami, or Jiva Goswami's writings, he gives many different gradations within the gradations. For instance, there's a Kanishtha Kanishtha, there's a Madhyam Kanishtha, there's an Uttam Kanishtha, there's a
Kanishtha Madhyam,
or Uttam Madhyam, there's a
Kanishtha
Uttam, Madhyam Uttam, Uttam Uttam. These are Uttam Uttam. The new name is Uttam Uttam Das. So. So anyway, in this fifth verse, which everyone should study as homework, it's an important verse to go over. Rupa Goswami talks about three levels of devotees, and then Prabhupada enumerates and illuminates what they are. One should mentally honor the devotee who chants the holy name of Lord Krishna. One should offer humble obeisances to the devotee who has undergone spiritual initiation, diksha, and is engaged in worshipping the deity. And one should associate with and faithfully serve that pure devotee who is advanced in undeviated devotional service and whose heart is completely devoid of the propensity to criticize others. Isn't that a nice description of the most advanced devotee? The heart is devoid of the propensity to criticize others. So, in this purport, Prabhupada gives a definition of the different levels of Kanishta, Madhyam, and Uttam. And I'll just read the one paragraph that it's in. Shall I?
Please.
Yes.
In this Krishna consciousness movement, a chance is given to everyone without discrimination of caste, creed, or color. Everyone is invited to join this movement, sit with us, take prasad, and hear about Krishna. When we see that someone is actually interested in Krishna consciousness and wants to be initiated, we accept him as a disciple for the chanting of the holy name of the Lord. When a neophyte devotee is actually initiated and engaged in devotional service by the orders of the spiritual master, he should be accepted immediately as a bona fide Vaishnava, and obeisances should be offered unto him. Out of many such Vaishnavas, one may be found... Is that your actual phone? Oh, okay. I don't think they make those anymore. Out of many such Vaishnavas, one may be found to be very seriously engaged in the service of the Lord and strictly following all the regulative principles, chanting the prescribed number of rounds on japa beads, and always thinking how to expand the Krishna consciousness movement. Such a Vaishnava should be accepted as an Uttama Adhikari, a highly advanced devotee, and his association should always be sought. So these are very practical and most importantly verifiable ways to understand different gradations of devotees. Sometimes people think Uttama Adhikari means somebody's dancing with Krishna. But if you come here and I say, 10 minutes ago I was just dancing with Krishna, prove that I wasn't. What can anyone say? But you can verify if someone's actually following the process. You can see that their sadhana is visible. You can also see that what their preoccupation is, how they're engaged in devotional service, thinking about how to spread the Krishna consciousness movement and so on. So there's very practical ways in which we see what level a devotee is on and how we associate with the different devotees. And this is from Rupa Goswami, and we are Rupanugas, or followers of Rupa Goswami. Any other question? Yeah.
You were mentioning how we have these five jewels, and then we have the string to string them. I just want to confirm, the string is constant cultivation?
It's awareness. Okay. Yeah, and constant cultivation, which would be the same thing. Which means that you make it a priority. You have to practice that, because the natural tendency may be otherwise. And if I practice keeping that in the forefront, that to remain humble. In the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, Narada Muni says, with one's body, mind, and words, one should always be cultivating humility. And this is Vaishnava culture, very humble. You'll find in the Jiva Dharma, when the Vaishnavas are called to debate with a number of very learned priests from the Muslim community, these Vaishnavas are so learned, but when they come forward, they present themselves in a very humble way. And also, we see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was the epitome of humility. Although, not in his youth, that's before he became initiated. In his youth, he was so combative with his learning that he would go around defeating everybody. But this is part of his Leela, his Acharya Leela teaching. After he went and took initiation from Srila Ishvara Puri, he became outwardly a Vaishnav. And in that, he was doing service for all the Vaishnavs. Can I carry your water pot? Can I clean your house? And all these kinds of things. And then after he took sannyas, we see when he went to Jagannath Puri, he met with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, who's the greatest scholar of India at the time. And if you Google his name, you'll find out that he is historically known as one of the greatest scholars that India has ever known. And he was there in Jagannath Puri as the minister to the king, and Mahaprabhu came there as a 24-year-old sannyasi, and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya then saw him and said, "Oh, I need to help you. You're going to have trouble. You're a very beautiful young man, and you just took sannyas." So he said, "I'm going to instruct you in Vedanta and tell you how to be a real sannyasi." So what did Mahaprabhu do? Say, "I already know everything. What are you going to tell me?" Is that what he did?
He listened for 7 days.
"I know everything." He listened for 7 days. He sat very humbly, just listened to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya give his diatribe about the various points of so-called philosophy. And then Sarvabhauma said, "You're not asking any questions. Normally my students ask questions. Is it not clear about the information?" And he said, "The information is very clear, but your explanations are cloudy. They cover everything." And then gradually he began to show his superior knowledge, and Sarvabhauma surrendered to him. And also when he went to Prakashananda Saraswati, Mahaprabhu impressed him with this humility. So devotees are very humble like that. Yes?
We know all this, but sometimes my question is, how do we get the humbleness? We try so hard sometimes with our prakriti, our the way we are, and sometimes it's hard to be humble everywhere it is. Even though I know personally that I should be humble, but sometime out of something and the situation comes, you forget and you. So, what daily practice? What is the best way to?
Well, let me ask you a question. When Arjuna fought on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, was he humble?
Not at first.
When Hanuman jumped to Lanka and they lit his tail on fire and he burned down the Lanka, was he being humble? He was. Both of them were. Humility doesn't mean just that you go around cowering before everyone and say, "Okay, yes, that's fine with me." But humility actually means that you don't put yourself as the center, but you put Krishna as the center, as we said in the beginning. And that means that you take your service to Krishna as the most important, and that you'll do that rather than what you think is right. In other words, you'll take a higher authority. Everyone's taking some higher authority. Some take it from their mind, which misleads them. But if you take your authority from Krishna and you say, "I'm going to do Krishna's bidding, even if it doesn't exactly fit my comfort zone right now," that's humility. And Arjuna didn't want to fight. It didn't fit his comfort zone. But he did it anyway. That was humility. And Hanuman, in the course of doing his duty for Ramachandra, was humble. So outwardly, humility may look a little different from simply being... what is the word I'm looking for?
Meek?
Yeah. Just being meek before everyone. For instance, if somebody attacks the temple, you say, "Oh, we're very humble. We'll just let them do what they want." No. We would. It's not against the principle of humility. Humility,
right on,
to protect Krishna's interest. You know, so... But we must be careful that it's for Krishna and we're not doing it because we're putting ourselves in the center. So that's the point. That is the point. If someone else had a problem. Yes,
I was going to ask, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya explained it to Lord Chaitanya for 7 days. How long did Lord Chaitanya talk before he accepted?
How long did Lord Chaitanya talk before?
Yeah, when he said...
Before Sarvabhauma accepted him? Oh, I don't know if there's a time given.
Yeah, I don't have a reason.
Just that he was instantly impressed, because after that he asked him about the Atmarama verse, and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya gave some amazing answers, and Mahaprabhu said, now I'll say something. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya thought, no one can say anything after that, because I just covered everything. And Mahaprabhu went on and gave so many other explanations that were mind-boggling, that's what really started getting to Sarvabhauma. He thought, this isn't human. This isn't possible, because I'm already like the topmost human speculator there is, and you know, these kinds of things are not possible. And so it happened in a gradual way that his heart started to change, and then Mahaprabhu showed him. Yeah.
My husband told me a story of Lord Chaitanya and we cleaned the temple. When he cleaned the temple, he put all the devotees. So they say that let's go clean the temple, and then you only have to think in Krishna. When you pass something, like the broom or something, you say Krishna, Krishna all the time, put Krishna first. So when they finished cleaning the temple, he asked you guys. Yeah, and I don't know exactly the story, I remember. He said, okay, and he went inside the temple and started cleaning again, more and more, and he take pieces of dirt and everything. And he never stopped. And then they asked him why he's doing it like over and over. It's like our heart, like we're never going to stop cleaning. Something like that?
Yes. He showed specifically that he cleaned the temple 3 times. Even though it looked like it was completely clean, still he went for the very fine pieces of sand and tiny pieces of dust to show the example of how we must be meticulous in cleaning the heart. And it's described that the heart is an altar. And when you establish deities, it should be very clean. And the heart also has to be clean of any kind of ulterior motive before we can install Krishna there. And Prabhupada mentions in his purport to that section of the Chaitanya Charitamrita that once one has completely cleaned the heart and invited Krishna to come sit there on the throne of one's heart, then one can hold a festival. That's the real cause of having a festival, is that you've taken the trouble to clean your heart. And yes, it goes on constantly, because there are ways in which the dust can come back in. And so Mahaprabhu, in that pastime, was very careful when he cleaned the temple to throw the dust a long way away from the temple doors, because it can come and blow back in again. And as long as we're in this material body, we're susceptible. We're susceptible to contamination by the material nature. I gave a seminar, it was first called The Anatomy of a Fall Down. Then I changed it to be more positive, called Failure is the Pillar to Success. Someone said, that's a pretty negative title. You sure you want to do that at New Vrindavan? So I changed it to that, but I was looking very minutely about these points about what causes a fall down. And one thing that Prabhupada says frequently is that one has to be very careful. The minute I'm not careful and I think that I'm okay now, I can treat others in a more rough way, or I don't have to observe all the regular principles, or 3.5 is good enough, or something like that. That's the beginning of it. That's when Maya slips in. It's like, if Prabhupada gives the example, the silver-tongued salesperson comes to the door, don't open it. Because once the crack is open, then the door opens, and then it's like, well, just come in for a minute. And then next thing you know, you bought a vacuum cleaner you didn't need for $1,000. You have to be really careful. Yes.
I have a question about the nectar of instruction.
Mm-hmm.
When it mentions not having a desire to criticize others, but also on the other side of that, I would like some advice on how to deal with a situation in which somebody might be criticizing a devotee in your presence. And I think of the pastimes of Jayananda Prabhu, and he would be exemplary and not tolerating that kind of operato. So what are we to do in those situations?
Thank you for bringing up China. He was my bhakti leader in San Francisco in 1973. And when I came to the temple, I didn't know who was who. And for the first 3 days, I thought he was one of the bhaktas. Even he was the bhakti leader because he was so humble. That I thought, and he glorified the new devotees so much that I thought, oh, he's one of us. And I said, no, you don't understand. He's the he's the most advanced devotee here. One shouldn't participate in. Now, let me make a distinction between criticism. When this verse says one should not, that the devotee is devoid of the propensity to criticize others, what that means is envy. Envy means the inability to tolerate the eminence of another. Someone else is shining and you feel bad about it. They're starting to look really good, they're making more advancement than you, and you start to feel morose and wish that they would somehow trip and fall. And when someone does slip up, externally, you know, you may show otherwise, but internally you're going, okay, good. This is envy. And this propensity to be envious of others, to criticize others, that's what has to disappear. However, you'll read in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 17th chapter, in the descriptions of the austerities of speech, that austerity of speech means one should speak truthfully, beneficially, avoid speech that offends. And Prabhupada gives the distinction there that if it's your duty to correct others, you have to give some critical. Criticism means you have to be critical. It means you have to look and say what was good, what was bad. And you have to point it out. However, he says, unless that's your duty to instruct that person, you needn't bring it up. For instance, if someone comes and submits oneself as your student, says, I'm your student, I am officially asking you to correct me from now on, right? Then it's the duty of the person to point out, like, do like that, don't do like this. That's criticism, isn't it? But it's not envious. So there's a difference in that. However, if the kind of envy that you sense has, if the kind of criticism that you sense has envy mixed into it, comes up in a conversation, then you can politely excuse yourself, or you can change the subject, or you can defend the person. One way that you can defend people is by standing on a principle that you don't talk about people behind their back. That's a good principle to uphold in any case, because talking about people behind their back isn't fair. And if the point comes up about somebody and they say, yeah, this person is such and such and this and that, you say, I'm sorry, I have a principle, I don't talk about people behind their back. Mm-hmm. I'll wait till later. And if the person doesn't honor that, then they, I think, my mom's calling me, I gotta go. Or you can grab your phone and say, oh yeah, I think I just got a call, and excuse me, yeah, this will take a while. But somehow, one should not associate with people who you know are chronic criticizers out of envy, because it actually does spoil your faith. When you hear pernicious criticism of devotees, which is mixed with envy, it inhibits your ability to appreciate them, to appreciate the devotee that's being criticized. They may have so many exalted qualities, they may have a few qualities that are questionable, but Krishna says, apichet sudaracharo, even if they have that, they're considered sadhu. And unless it's your business, you were given a position where you're managing and you have to consider somebody's good qualities or bad qualities for how they're going to go on, you don't have to participate then. You're not obligated, and you can find any way that you like to excuse yourself, including taking the back route because you know the other people are standing in the front route. I've done that before. I see they're standing over there and I know what's going to happen when I walk by. I know what they're talking about, so I just take the back route. And keep your eyes down and go in the temple room. Slip in the back door. Save yourself a lot of grief and trouble. And if you live like that, you'll start to feel more concentrated and less distracted, and you'll be able to always think of Vaishnavas. And it's not that, you know, we just ignore everything. We know some people have some qualities, and it doesn't mean also that somebody has some bad qualities and they're a Vaishnava that you have to associate with them. It doesn't mean that also. You can respect them from a distance. You can respect anybody at the distance, long or far. And then you can always find something. Like somebody will bring up that such and such is like this and that. Did you know they did that? Says, yeah, but they have nice kids. How do you account for that? Because I've seen that before. Sometimes people have these really like wayward qualities, and it's like, why are their kids so nice? I mean, they're Paka Vaishnavas. So find something good, turn it around. Did your mother ever tell you, if you don't have anything good to say, don't say anything at all? And Mahaprabhu brought this up also when one devotee came to him and said, I've made so many offenses to Vaishnavas with my tongue. What do I do? Mahaprabhu said, making an offense to a Vaishnava is like drinking poison. And then he said, the antidote is offering some praise. So when your tongue wants to criticize, it wants to move. So it may be harder to hold it than to say something nice and surprise yourself. And if you're in that assembly, then you have to find a way to change the conversation or extract yourself from it. And you have full permission to do so by the Shastra. Okay? I mean, despite what people might think of you socially, you know, it's like, why'd she walk away or whatever? So what? It's okay. Yeah.
What about, is there any situation in which, like, say someone hurts your feelings really bad, can you, like, vent to a good friend or something without trying to cross over into...
Yeah, and if you're really careful, you'll notice that you're being careful when you're talking about certain situations and you're not crossing over to that point of envy, of unnecessarily bringing up points, either simply to criticize them to make yourself feel better. And you should always maintain that. That's part of Vaishnava etiquette. And how you speak is the most evident way that you're exhibiting Vaishnava etiquette. Because a fool's not detected until he or she speaks. He may remain quiet for a long time, and it's like, yes, and then like, okay, he's a fool.
So in other words, you're saying, you could say, oh, that really hurt my feelings, they did this, but then you don't cross over to...
Well, look for a practical solution. First of all, go to somebody confidentially. You don't just, you know, stand outside the prasadam room and start telling everybody. But, you know, make an appointment with somebody you know is mature enough to handle it and tell them why, you know, you're processing your own feelings.
Yeah, and then you don't start picking on their clothes.
And it's also a good idea, if possible, to approach the person and use nonviolent communication in order to express, you know, you may not have intended to do this, but this is what happened. This is how it made me feel. And in the future, if you could do this instead of that, you know, be very clear like that. Okay. Yes. Is everyone okay?
Is that okay?
All right. Yes.
Related to these two Matajis, sometimes I'm just going to go specific. When we serve, some people say, oh, how come there is no kheer today? They should make it or something. And then I feel like that's not personal offense to me particularly, but they are offending the sannyasi or brahmacharis are working so hard, cooking every day, and that person have tendency to criticize mostly or say, oh, they should, why? No? So when we are serving, then I feel like telling them, told that person that we don't come here for kheer every day to feed our hunger is spiritual. So I'm sorry, you know. I mean, but I kind of got a little angry in my mind that they're working so hard rather than appreciating. If one day that person, you don't have a kheer, but I said there are so many other. Yesterday you have a tons of feast, and one day you don't have key. Don't. Our goal is to feed spiritually, not the bodily. So
that's why we have a policy at ISV. If you bring up something like that, then that's your new service. So it's a little more careful. How come we don't have any care? Okay, you're in charge of the care department. We make sure we have it 7 days a week. And we'll have you sign up on the chart over there.
I say that I kind of got, you can bring some.
Same, yeah.
I said, why don't you...
It's a volunteer organization, and we should appreciate what's being done already. And unless you're in the lamentable position of being a manager, then you don't have to go into that in as much detail. You can simply see the good side and try to encourage. When you're a manager, then you have a little more burden.
That person got even mad. Like next time when I said Hare Krishna, he didn't say, but that's okay because I wasn't taking it personally, but I was feeling that. Well, in that situation, is it okay that I say it the way I say it? Or?
Well, it depends. You judge a thing by its result, and sometimes it's inevitable that people become angry, but there's an art to also helping somebody who criticizes to change the way they look at it in a gentle way so that they actually feel that they see your point without being overreactive and then becoming more fiery or something like that. Sometimes it's not possible. Sometimes people, that's naturally the way they are, but you score extra points, just like in wrestling you get more points if you get a reversal. You're almost down, but then you turn it around and you're able to. So in the same way, if someone is extraordinarily critical and you're able to actually charm them or turn around their point of view so that they become positive also, you get extra points. More points than, yeah, definitely more points.
I tried, but it didn't work. So every time something other
people. Do your best. Mm-hmm. You're doing your best. It's 11:35, I think. Right?
Yeah.
So, what's the next program?
Well, you have a couple of devotees to see, and then we have another meeting to get to.
Okay. It's been nice, hasn't it?
Yeah.
It's good to come together and spend time. And just one last thing is that we're part of Prabhupada's and Lord Chaitanya's army. I mean, even Prabhupada would write his letters, he would say Camp Toronto, Camp Los Angeles, because it is almost like, you know, the spiritual military. And what's really important is to find a place where you can use your potential to help push on the Krishna consciousness movement. Because by doing that, by absorbing your mind and thinking about how to spread Krishna consciousness and assisting in any way that you can now, then your senses will come under control. You'll get mercy from Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and you'll put yourself in a position for going back home, back to Godhead. So try to find a way to help spread Lord Chaitanya's movement in cooperation with the other devotees, and then put your heart into your service the best your ability. And the other thing is to really carefully do your sadhana every day. This practice is so powerful. The chanting of Hare Krishna and the reading of Srimad Bhagavatam particularly are so potent that if you just show up for it every day, even if you don't feel like it, and you keep doing it over your lifetime, then you'll be transformed and you'll get a spiritual body without doubt. Even if you don't, if you just have a little connection and you don't even have complete realization, if you stay in contact and keep doing, trust the process, then you'll have all success. Pancha kalpatu vishya kripa sindhi vishya patitana pavni yo vishya vishya Mahaprabhu ki jai.
Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, hey, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman.